Hello, and welcome back to the Live, Learn, and Play podcast. Today, I'm joined by Holly Trucks, and if you follow us on social media, you might have seen her picture with her son Jacob a couple weeks ago at a flag raising, and we're going to hear more about the significance of that and what her journey has been like with Arkansas Children's. But first, Holly, for those of us who don't know you yet or don't know your story, if you could just tell us briefly a little bit about yourself and your family, and especially your son, Jacob.
My husband, Chris, and I live on a farm in South Arkansas, a cattle farm. We have five children, from 21 down to Jacob is the youngest, and he's three. We'll be three next week. I'm a kindergarten teacher in Whitehall, so I'm around kids. This is my 20th year, all the time. Jacob came to our family when he was in NICU. Jacob was born with bilateral kidney dysplasia due to prune belly syndrome, and he was in the NICU for the first 5 months. So when we finally got to take Jacob home, we learned a whole new way of life.
So Holly, I'm sure you've gotten used to all the medical terms that you just shared with us, but for those of us who aren't familiar, if you could kind of explain in a non-medical way what exactly was wrong with Jacob's kidneys.
Jacob, the bilateral kidney dysplasia is where the kidneys either did not form or they were very small. Jacob's were very small, and they did not work at all. He had very, very little urine output when he was born. That was due to prune belly syndrome, and prune belly syndrome is also called Eagle Barrett, and it's where the abdominal muscles do not form correctly. So he is, those abdominal muscles are not there to make everything else be held in.
Okay. No, and that makes sense to someone, yes. And I'm sure now that he's been a patient here, you've gotten so used to the medical lingo. So now you're at the NICU here at Arkansas Children's. Then what was the next steps for Jacob and your family?
We were here for about 5 months. When we got ready to go home, we had to come stay at NICU with him for a few days. We were taught how to give his medications. We were taught how to use his G-tube button to feed him. We had feeding classes where we were shown how to actually work with the bottle with him so that he could learn how to use a bottle. We had to take a CPR class and be certified in CPR before he could be released to us to go home. We had a car seat safety check, all of those things to make sure we were ready for him to leave NICU. When we left NICU, we were also on hemodialysis, so we were back and forth to the hospital 5 days a week.
Wow.
At that time, because he was so small, he had had a peritoneal dialysis catheter placed in his belly, but it was still healing, so we were not able to use that at the time. We were released in August. In about October, we were able to start peritoneal dialysis at home. So we would do that. We've done it anywhere from 10 hours to 14 hours a night at home. And again, we were trained on everything. We had to come several days to the dialysis unit where we met with the nurses, and they showed us how to use the machine, all of the safety techniques. I had to take a test. I had to learn everything there was, just like I would be his nurse at home.
So earlier you mentioned that you have five children, you're a teacher, and everything that you just described sounds like a full-time job in itself. So how did you manage to do everything that you just mentioned?
I learned to live with a lot less sleep.
Okay.
When you're a mom, you have to do what you have to do. So I did keep my full-time job. I did teach. My husband, he is very good. He helps me with him. And since he's a farmer, he is able to stay more during the day when I'm at work, or my parents also helped. We had doctor's appointments. Once we were released from the hemodialysis unit, we had doctor's appointments at least once a month for several hours that day. And we usually had blood work every other week. So he had to come, but my parents were able to help, or my husband could bring him to an appointment if I wasn't able to be there.
So take us back to the day that you left the hospital. You had gone through different planning and preparation. You took a test. What did you feel like as a mom
leaving the hospital with Jacob?
I was very confident because I had been taught everything that I needed to know. We went home. We had a great first night. The second day, we went out for a walk. It was a great day. Everything was right on schedule. I had all the medicines. I had everything perfectly organized. We went to bed that night. Everything was great. The next morning I woke up. Things weren't so great. The bed was wet. He was soaking wet. He never cried. He never made a sound. But everything was wet. And I called one of my nurses that we had. And I said, I can't do this. And she was like, what? What happened? And I said, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. And she said, what happened? And I said, I fed the bed. And she said, it's okay, everybody feeds the bed. And what had happened was he was on a feeding tube all night long, and it has a med port on the tube. And when he rolled over, the med port had popped open. So all of the feeds that he was supposed to get overnight, the bed got. And he was literally laying in a puddle of milk when we woke up the next morning.
Okay, so it wasn't just a normal bedwetting. This
Oh, was... no, it was okay. It was just a mistake on my part, but something that I didn't know, something that couldn't have been helped. And she walked me right back through it, and she said, we're just going to pick up, and you can do this. And we did. We've done great. We fed the bed a few more times, but that's just how life goes.
Fed the bed. Okay, that's a new term that I've heard. You just talked about the nurse that talked you through that, kind of the next steps and where to go from there. Let's talk about your care team here at Arkansas Children's and what they mean to you, if there's any special stories or anything that really stands out that you would like to share.
We had a group of primary nurses in NICU. And in my opinion, that's the best thing that you can do. I knew exactly who Jacob's nurses would be all week long. I had a calendar that I had made because that's me. And I knew who was working what day and who would have Jacob and who would be his night nurse. And to me, that made all the difference in the world, because when I had to go to work, when I had to go home to the other kids at night, I knew exactly who would be with Jacob.
And Jacob was in the NICU for 5 months, correct?
Right about 5 months.
Okay. You mentioned your care team at the NICU, but nephrology was also obviously a big part of your care here and Jacob's. Tell us more about your team and what they mean to you.
I think the main thing is that they are a team. They all know Jacob. From what I understand, they have a meeting every week so that they inform each other about what has gone on with each patient. So when the next doctor comes on, even though it's not our primary doctor, the next doctor knows what Jacob has gone through. They know his recent issues, if he's had any, and they're ready to take care of him right there. Dr. Blazak always told me, we're a team. They know how to take care of Jacob if I'm not here, because we're a team. And they are a team. The nurses have been great. The dietitian, pharmacist, everybody. They all know me and they all know Jacob. And when they know you, you're that much better at trusting them.
I want to shift gears a little bit to the flag raising and talking about another big moment in Jacob's life. But I want you to kind of take us through the timeline of what got you to organ donation and when that was first, when you first started talking about that and the possibility of organ donation.
To be able to be listed to receive a kidney, a child has to be a certain weight and a certain height. So we always had that goal in mind. We did everything that we could to count calories. The dietitian makes sure that you're getting enough calories without having too much fluid, all the medications. And so we always had that goal in mind. When we started getting close to that goal, we started having conversations about, hopefully soon we're going to be looking at a transplant. We need to be thinking about donors we need to be thinking about, how this will be handled, you know, that kind of thing. And of course, my first words were, I'll donate. And our doctor said, you can't donate. You have to take care of him. And I think that was more of a way for me to have to think about, there's more to it than just, oh, here's a kidney. I'll be fine and I can take care of me and the baby. So there was a lot of planning that went into that. Of course, I had my husband, I had my parents, I had people to take care of me, I had people to take care of Jacob, but I think that was his way of saying, we have to think more than just jumping out and say, oh, I'll donate. So that put the first thought in my mind. We did have a few times that in fundraisers or things that people would say, well, when it comes time to donate, let me know and I'll see if I'm a match. But a lot of those don't pan out. Again, it's easier to say than to do. So when Jacob finally met his goal of weight and height, we got to meet with the transplant team for a transplant evaluation meeting. And that's where another day of 3 to 4 hours of clinic time. And they do all of Jacob's workup. They talk to me. They talk to Dad. They go over a new diet that we have to follow. They talk to all the medications that we will be on. They talk about rejection. They talk about donors. They talk about deceased donors and how all of that works. And from there, I told them that I was still interested. So at that point, they have me go online and I go to UAMS's website and I have to fill out, I guess I would say, an application to be a living donor.
So you knew from the beginning, even when Jacob was a baby, that the organ donation was going to happen at some point?
Yes. Yes. Before we ever left NICU, we were told. I mean, his kidneys did not work at all. The week before we left NICU, they removed what small kidneys he had. So he had a bilateral nephrectomy before he ever came home from the hospital. So we knew at that point that we would have to have a transplant. Dialysis worked great for us. We had very few problems with dialysis. In fact, I ask, why are we rocking the boat? And they just said, because this is not Mother Nature's way of taking care of a body. You know, a machine cannot do what a kidney can do. So at that time, I had to accept it and say, we're going to rock this boat a little bit more, and we're going to go forward with the transplant and get our kidney.
So even though the doctor said you need to, your main focus needs to be taking care of Jacob, you still had this feeling like, I want to donate. Where did that come from, where you still wanted to pursue it no matter what?
First, because in our training, in our talks, we learned that a living donor kidney will last longer and is better for the recipient. So on the average, you know, if a deceased donor kidney will last 10 to 12 years on average, and a living donor's will last 13 to 15, then I wanted Jacob to be able to have those extra few years, if at all possible.
So you go to the website, and then what do you do next at UAMS, the website, to get connected or see if you are a match? What's that process like?
You wait on their coordinator to call.
Okay. And how long?
The first thing is a very simple few questionnaire about being a donor. And then they send you another questionnaire that's like 200 questions online. Wow. And it asks about every system in your body, from have you ever had heart problems to kidney stones, anything with your whole body. You have to be in tip-top shape. We talked about the way that we take care of our kidney. They wanted to know, do you drink alcohol? Do you do illegal drugs? What prescription medications are you on? Because all of those things affect your kidney. But it's not just the alcohol we drink, it's anything other than water. they want to know everything to know that and make sure that that kidney is going to be the best kidney for Jacob.
Did you ever see yourself donating an organ or a kidney in your lifetime? Was this even on your radar?
No, not at all. I was always a donor on my driver's license. That was easy. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know anything about organ donation as far as being a living donor. And I sure didn't know anyone personally who needed it that I knew of. But since Jacob, we have found out that there's 3 to 4 right there in our small community who are waiting. It's just not real public because they're not 3. It's usually an adult, and adults just don't get the same attention that kids get. But they're still needing that kidney. They're still waiting on a match. And I never knew that those people were out there needing that.
So after you fill out the 200-question questionnaire, then what happened next?
The coordinator from UAMS called. Children's Hospital has a coordinator that takes care of Jacob. Mm-hmm. UAMS has a coordinator that takes care of the donor. So she called and set me up with an appointment. And I went in and had blood drawn, had a urine test done, had an EKG done, had a chest x-ray, lots of different tests to make sure everything was where it needed to be. And then I met with the doctors, and I had to meet with a nephrologist, I had to meet with a dietitian, I had to meet with the pharmacist, I had to meet with the surgeon that would actually do the surgery. I think they told me to plan on 2 full days at UAMS of test and talking to the doctors.
Okay, so you go through all the tests and then you find out that you are a match. So what did that feel like, and how did I would imagine just every year your focus shifts again and you realize that now you're going to be the donor and while you're still the caretaker.
Yes, and I should go back. We had to have those initial first few lab tests done to see if I was a match or compatible before all of those other tests followed. So before I got there, I knew blood type matched, and that's because I'm an O blood type, so I pretty much can donate to anyone. So we did those, and then they did, I have no idea, cross matches, antibody test, all kinds of blood work to make sure that he would not reject my kidney.
And then, so everything matched.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and during this whole process, I know Jacob's almost 3. Were you telling him or sharing with him what was happening? Did he understand or ask any questions or?
No, he did not have any idea.
Wow.
What was going on. I mean, even when we came to the hospital, we talked about it. You're going to get a new kidney. Mm-hmm. You're going to not have to be hooked up to the machine all night. We're not going to have to stay here all day long while you're have to be within 5 foot of this machine. Mm. But as far as him understanding and asking questions, no, he didn't understand. He'll tell you now, I got a kidney.
Yeah.
Or I have a scar. You want to see my scar? He knows those things. But as far as him understanding that I gave him a kidney, no, he doesn't.
It's so, I get the innocence of a child that all of this all of the surgery and everything that's going on behind the scenes, and he's just a happy 2-year-old. Like, that's beautiful, the innocence behind that. So what was surgery day like for you and for Jacob?
Surgery day was March the 2nd. We checked into the hospital on March the 1st, and to Children's Hospital with Jacob, to do all of the preliminary testing, getting IVs started, that type thing. We had our flag-raising ceremony at 1 that day, so Jacob got to go down and be part of that. When we got back upstairs, it was just a slow process of getting everything ready to go. He had to be here the next morning because they would knock his immune system completely out before surgery, before he was taken down. So that day, I had to be at UAMS by 6 o'clock. So I went to UAMS. Jacob stayed here. My surgery started at 8. And they said last 4 to 6 hours about. Dr. Patel was my surgeon at UAMS. So he came in about 8 o'clock, talked to me, and then we left and went to the OR. He did my part of the surgery. And from what I understand, once my kidney was out and he had checked it and made sure everything was good, my kidney comes to Children's Hospital, and that's when they get started on Jacob. They don't do anything for him, really, until the kidney is here and ready to go. Dr. Patel finishes with me, and he came over to help Dr. Burdine with Jacob's part of the surgery. So there were actually two surgeons in with Jacob. Dr. Patel and Burdine did the kidney transplant here. His surgery lasted about 6 hours, started about noon, and lasted about 6 hours. But there were a few other surgery components that they did while they were doing the transplant. He had to have a vesicostomy because his bladder doesn't work correctly. So he had to have that done. So it probably took a little bit longer than it would if it would have just been the transplant.
Again, I'm going to ask how you were feeling on surgery day, because you were going through surgery yourself, obviously, and then you had Jacob at a totally different hospital going through surgery. What were your thoughts as a mom and knowing that you had to take care of yourself to recover?
It was very emotional. I wanted to be here with Jacob, but I also knew that Jacob was in good hands. So at UAMS, I wasn't worried. I was not anxious, worried, or anything about my surgery. I had met Dr. Patel. I had heard wonderful things about Dr. Patel. I knew one of the nurses that was there. And then the coordinator that I had spent hours with was also in the operating room with me. So as far as that end of it, I was very relaxed. I was fine. With Jacob here, it was scary because that was the first time that I had not been in the hospital with him when he was inpatient. Every other time I had been here, when he was in NICU, I was here at least during the day, every day, to see him. Never missed a day. If he was inpatient for anything, once we were discharged from NICU, I never missed. I mean, I was here the entire time. We never left. And for me, being a controlling mom, got to know who's where and what they're doing at all times. It was hard because I couldn't be here. I think it was hard on my husband because he was here. I was having surgery down the road. He couldn't be there with me because of no visitors. But he also couldn't be there because I would rather him have been here with Jacob. So he was getting updates from UAMS and he was getting updates from here. And I know for those 10 to 12 hours, he was a nervous wreck between the two hospitals. My parents had the older kids at home, keeping them busy, so all of that was okay. But as far as for me, I knew it was something that had to be done. I mean, we have to have a kidney. That's just what we had to do. And I did beg that they do my surgery and Jacob's surgery in the same hospital, and they told me they couldn't do it. But like I said, I knew that both of us were in good hands. I knew that Dr. Patel was great with me. I knew that Dr. Burdine was going to be great here. And I knew that Dr. Patel would be back and forth between the two of us. So,
well, we definitely want to hear what the next steps are and what life looks like now. But what do you wish people knew about organ donation that you've learned along your journey?
First, I wish that everyone knew to do that little simple thing on their driver's license to be an organ donor and to make sure that their family knows their wishes and to be adamant that those wishes are followed the best that they can be. So many kids and adults need a donor that they don't have a family member who can donate to because of a disease or an illness or a not perfect kidney. I was lucky enough that I had a healthy kidney that I could donate, but not everyone does. So I think that's the first thing that I would want people to know, is to make sure that your family knows your wishes so that they can make sure that your organs are donated, if that's possible, at the time of your death. The other thing that I wish people knew was that you can be a living donor. That's even better than a deceased donor. I think that if people understood the process, there would be more people who would be willing to donate. You know, UAMS took great care of me. They made sure that all bills were taken care of. That I think part of that is taken through the recipient's insurance, and then other parts are given by grants. There were different grants that they informed me about, like for my salary compensation. It's not going to take care of the whole thing, but the state does give, where I teach, they call it transplant days. So those transplant days took over so that I didn't have to use all of my sick days to be able to be paid for while I was off for surgery. There's other grants out there that you can apply for to help you pay for gas. We did not have to have a hotel stay, but for hotel stays, for meals, for parking tickets, anything, or parking expenses while you're in the hospital, it's just having a good coordinator who helps you get all of those things done. I wish that there was a group in Arkansas to help advocate to do more living donations. It's just hard to get the word out so that people understand that. I mean, when I'm off work for 8 weeks, there's a lot of people who can't afford that. Right. But you have to have that coordinator like Larissa at UAMS who tells you, I don't know if this will work for you, but you need to make sure you ask. Because a lot of those things have come through for me that we would never have known without her doing those. And the last thing, I think we need to educate people, especially young people, on the importance of taking care of their body. First, so that their organs don't fail. And second of all, so that if they had a chance or had a family member, so that they could be a donor. Or when they pass away, that they can be a deceased donor. You know, everything that we do affects our body. And little did I know until 3 years ago, everything in your body is pretty much run by your kidneys. You know, it affects your entire body. So I wish that kids, and I know kids are kids, but still, even if you can make a difference in one child who said, I can't do that because someday I may need that kidney, I think that that's the best thing that we could teach them.
And I'm sure through all of this, you have become an advocate in a way. And what you've done for Jacob is definitely, it's amazing. And when other people hear your story, you are advocating. You are helping us understand that process. So, Holly, you mentioned the flag raising a little bit ago, and we also posted pictures of you and Jacob at the flag raising. But what exactly was that event and the significance of raising the Donate Life flag?
I think the main significance for raising the flag is for people who are coming to the hospital to see that flag being flown, to know that another organ has been donated. For the families, if it's a deceased donor, they raise the flag in memory or honor of the person who gave the organ. In my case, since it was a living donor, it was to bring attention to donating organs, even living donor organs. And maybe people would start asking questions about the flag or what were those people doing around the flagpole or how can I be part of that. After the flag's flown for a few days while the transplant's happening, they take that flag and they mail it to the family of the donor. So significance, I think, is advocating, getting the word out, spreading the word, making sure that people know how to become a donor, and also making sure that people know how important it is to the family.
So I think we're all curious how little Jacob is doing now, what his treatment looks like going forward, and what milestones or exciting things are you ready to see him do?
Jacob's kidney is doing great. All of our lab work is looking perfect. I did forget to mention earlier about whenever I had my lab work. The day after surgery, my lab work looked pretty much the same as it did the day before surgery. So my body never really even knew that it was missing a kidney. The other one just took over, and it was doing great by itself. So as far as how it affected me, there was no effect. It didn't know. My body just compensated and did what it needed to do. For Jacob, the labs, it took a few days for it to level out because, of course, he has an adult kidney in a child's body. So there were a lot of different things like fluid intake and medications that had to be adjusted according to those labs every day. Right now, his labs are looking great. We have pretty much all of his medications leveled to where the doctor wants them to be. And he's just happy and healthy and living his best life right now.
What does it mean to you now to look back on everything that you've gone through and realize that you gave Jacob a chance at living a full life?
That's the most important part. We want Jacob to be a normal kid. We want him to be able to go to school. We want him to be able to go outside and play. We want him to be able to ride a bicycle or play ball or whatever he wants to do.
Holly, thank you for sharing your story and your advocacy for organ donation, and I think just shining the light on what the process has been like for you and your family. So
thank you for having me. I love my Jacob, and I love to share his story.
We appreciate your time and your bravery.